Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassam. Permission from Ajahn Maha and all my fellow monks to offer some reflections on this new moon night. So it's the second week into our rains retreat. And yeah, things are going, as far as I know, very, very well. Sangha is very harmonious. Spending time together, having a good time. And we're starting to calm down, hopefully naturally and organically, not too much force. I personally quite enjoy the group sits of in the morning, 7 to 9, and then the evening sits together as well. So that's good. And like I said, during this range retreat, the first part of it is focused on different ways to calm the mind down. And then as we get towards the end, we say a few things about the insights that come from having a still mind. But for the next few weeks, just helping offering different tools to people that they can use in their practice of stilling the mind, in the practice of samadhi. So last week we talked about the few kind of obstacles to a peaceful meditation, kind of expectations, what you might see in your meditation, craving that might arise, that also disturbs the mind, moves it away from the present moment, and then disturbance can be a pain in the body. But so this week, I'm practicing, focusing on what we call the spiritual powers. And these are the tools that we can use to empower our meditation, to empower a practice of stilling the mind. And most of you are probably familiar with the five called the balas, the spiritual powers. I just listed off. First is faith, saddha. And then with faith comes energy. With energy comes mindfulness. Mindfulness, you have stillness. After stillness is wisdom. Insight. So these are the spiritual powers that we can rely on to help our practice of meditation, to help the practice of cultivating the mind. And I think the first is it's the most important. Okay, gets the ball rolling. This term saddha, obviously, commonly translated as faith, but also confidence. I think I like the second rendering much more, confidence. And confidence, what do we have faith or confidence in? And sometimes people just, translate faith. Faith can be a bit unclear, nebulous. You can have faith in anything. Have faith in all sorts of different girls. Faith in all sorts of strange things that we haven't seen before. But in Buddhism, that's not what we're talking about. Faith is more like that, but it's not just a belief system. Faith is something like, as one teacher pointed out, like a, it's called like a map that we have. Like the teaching of the Lord Buddha, faith in the teaching, it's like you have this map in front of you. And it describes very clearly where you are, where your house is located, where the trees are, the fence line, all that is very clearly in the map. But then further away from the map, where you are, further away from the house, it describes another sort of strange landscape that you're not familiar with. But you have faith that the map is true because the description that it has regarding your house, where the fence are, and all that is very, very clear. And when you use it to get from one place to another in your city, it's absolutely clear. It says, you know, this is where you see the petrol station. When you get there, you see the petrol station. You turn right, you'll see 7-Eleven. You turn right, going to the map, you see 7-Eleven. So you have a lot of, so you start to see, okay, you know, the map works. But then, further away from where you live, away from the city, a different state, it starts to describe landscapes, starts to describe buildings that doesn't seem to be possible, something that you haven't seen before. So describe, you know, wonderful sights, you know, a 1,000-story building, or describes a vast landscape of ocean that you haven't, you know, you haven't seen water before. You don't know what ocean looks like, but you have a lot of faith in this map because, you know, what it describes around your house is true. So similar to the Buddhist teaching, that what results we yield from our practice. The Buddha says, you know, to be virtuous, to keep the precept, and you feel better about yourself. So once you keep the precept, you see that it works. Or Buddha says, you know, to let go of unwholesome emotions, to always, you know, focus on the wholesome emotion, to fill your mind with inspiration, fill your mind with gratitude and forgiveness. And when you do that, you see that, wow, you feel better, your mind is more still, it's brighter, it's happier. And it gives you faith in the Buddhist teaching. What he said is true. You might not know what enlightenment is, you might not know what the kind of the sutta, what the eighth jhana is like, or even the different deep samadhi states, or even, you know, mind reading, or seeing 10,000 world system, all sorts of strange things that the sutta might be describing. Something that you're not even, you know, can't even get your head around some of these concepts. But you still have faith. Because, you know, because the literal that we practice, the result that we receive from our practice, is so true, so clear when the Buddha explained it, for the different meditation teachers. So that's the reason, as you practice, and as you gain results from the practice, faith increases, you know, tremendously. And that's why the faith of a stream enterer, a person who entered the stream, it's unshakable in the Buddha, in the Triple Gem, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Because they've seen the result, they've seen Nibbana. So they don't go looking for a different teacher. They don't go looking for a different teaching. Because they know that, you know, whatever the Buddha said is true, and not otherwise. But unless you get there, of course there'll be doubts from time to time. So, but it's important, unless you have faith, you're not going to do anything. You're not going to try out the practice. So initially, it is good to give the Buddhist teaching, to give your practice the benefit of the doubt in putting forth effort. And that's the thing with faith. You know, a lot of these five spiritual qualities are causal. They depend on one another. And faith is the most important because it's the first one that gets things going. If you don't have faith, you will not have the second, you know, the second kind of factor of spiritual powers is energy. If you don't have faith, energy will not arise. You're not going to put forth effort. If you don't think what the Buddha says is not true, what the Thai meditation teacher said is not true, you're not going to put the effort. So, but faith has many different, before I move on to energy, faith has many different kind of perspective or angles on it as well to reflect on. The different kind of faith to arise is one you have obviously to have a faith in what the Buddha said is true, and that one he was achieved, you know, perfect enlightenment as a human being, that he was, you know, just like any one of us, each and every one of us, and then because the Buddha achieved enlightenment as a human being, then that has great ramification for each and every one of us, that we too have what it takes to achieve full enlightenment as a human being. And sometimes it's good to reflect on that, that, you know, all the Kurba Ajahns, they achieve enlightenment under very, you know, austere conditions. You know, 50 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. And that, you know, given all good karma of having a nice, quiet place to come and practice, the four requisites are easily, you know, come by these days, there's also, should be, it's also possible for each and every one of us also to cultivate this path to liberation, to peace. And that, you know, we have to have faith, you know, and obviously the Buddhist teaching, the Buddha, faith in our teachers ahead of us, but also faith in ourselves, that we have what it takes. And that's what the Buddha said, you know. Angulimala, serial killer, you have all sorts of, you know, kind of strange and wonderful characters in the Buddhist time, and they all achieve enlightenment, you know, from princes to pauper to street walkers to prostitutes, and, you know, everybody had it. So, you know, and they weren't any different. So this kind of faith and confidence in our own abilities also is also very important. Sometimes in the West, we can be a bit negative on ourselves, on our ability. But this is where, you know, faith and confidence comes in. And it's the first spiritual power that unless we have a certain amount of this, we're going to be, you know, wavering from time to time. But so also knowing this, you know, do things that cultivate faith. You know, you can read biographies of good teachers, read Jataka stories regarding, you know, the Buddha's past lives. Or, you know, to do things that kind of raises your faith, increases your faith in the path. And, you know, see teachers that increases your faith, or stay close to one. Okay, that is very important. Unless you have faith and confidence, then you're not going to put forth the effort. And it's, you know, it's natural. So it's something that we should reflect on from time to time. If you're not kind of practicing as hard as you think you should be, go, you know, what is lacking? A lot of time it's, you know, it's causal. Just look at the factors beforehand. It's not just a mere factor of willpower. You can't will yourself to practice. You have to put forth the conditions that allow for practice to happen. So, you know, the Buddhist path is a path of causality, of cause and effect. You want result B, you have to put in cause A for it to happen. Waiting around, wishing around will not always come about. So it's good, always good to kind of reflect on it, you know. What cause and condition should I put in to arouse more energy, to arouse things in my practice? And it is faith, saddha, that is, you know, the first. And important factor of the five indriyas, the five spiritual qualities, and they're called the five spiritual powers because they give oomph to our practice. They empower, they make our path, you know, smooth and easy, if we have these five qualities. But on anything, it is a quality to be developed in each and every one of us. This is missing. No need to, you know, beat yourself over it, to despair, something that we can, it's like a muscle in the mind, something we can develop. And second, spiritual power, after you have faith is strong, then energy, virya, arises naturally. And it's the energy that is arises from faith and confidence. And it's, you know, as many people say, it's almost heroic energy. And you read, you know, the biographies of Ajahn Mun, your biography of, you know, Meiji Kale. And they had tremendous energy because they had such unshakable faith in their teacher or in the Buddhist, you know, teaching. So energy arises, huge amount of energy arises naturally. You have a lot of faith. You'll see, you know, around Ajahn Chah's time, a lot of his monks who lived with him had a lot of faith. And I think during the rains retreat, they would practice, you know, kind of what seems like, you know, amazing schedule. He would have them for the range retreat because he was, his practice was really going well. So he was going for it, I don't know, in one of his range retreat. And for that range retreat, I think he had his monk sit and walk all night, every night or something. Ridiculous. And they said, you know, and they kept up with it. And on reflecting, they said, yeah, they don't know how they were able to keep up with Ajahn Chah doing that thing. But a lot of people said this because they had so much faith and inspiration, and Ajahn Chah was doing the right thing, that had there, was coming from a right place, that they put forth the energy to practice with Ajahn Chah. And, during the first 2 months, they sat and walked, like I said, not to lie down until the dawn every night. And then they thought that was like pretty amazing, not to lie down and all that stuff, at night, and only to do sit and walk. But then during the last month of the rains retreat, he even, turned up the heat even more. He had them assume only one position. So once you sit at 6 o'clock, that's all you do. You sit. When you walk, that's all you do. You will have to walk for the 6 to 12 or 6 to 5 in the 3 in the morning or something. So they would, and they said, a lot of people obviously, kind of felt very, very tired. But they reflect on it that, it was because they had so much faith in Ajahn Chah that they were able to rouse up this amount of energy to put forth during the practice. And it wasn't kind of a willpower kind of thing. Because as each and every one of you know, when we experiment with sitting late at night, it is only through working with our mind and finding skillful ways to allow the energy to come up. And willpower, only works, for a good hour or two. After that, it's just kind of a natural condition. You have a lot of faith, energy arises. You have a very still mind, and energy is easy to sit. But at other times, if the mind, it doesn't have too much faith, or it's clouded over by, craving or defilements, then, you're feeling a bit tired, a bit irritation comes up, which is natural. So it's also nothing wrong. Just it's okay, yeah, today, this is the amount of level of energy I have. And just work with that within the body. But energy, remember that. So sometimes we reflect, why is it I'm not putting forth energy in my practice? So check your faith faculty. How much faith do you have in the Buddhist teaching? How much faith do you have in the teacher? And how much faith do you have in yourself to achieve, the good results in this lifetime, in this present moment? And with, so faith comes energy. With energy, and it's not the energy of restlessness, not the energy of doing things. That's the other thing to bring your attention to. The energy that arises from faith is this energy of stillness of the mind. It's clarity of the mind. The mind just kind of brightens, open up, and you feel like very energetic. But it's not like restlessness, or you have to go and talk to everybody or do things. You can't sit still. It's bright. It's clear. And it's hard to get your head around unless you feel it. And very, very still. That's the thing. You're aware, awake, but it's not the energy when you have a cup of coffee. It's not the energy when you are, pumped up on caffeine. Certainly not the energy of restlessness when you feel you cannot sit still, be still. There's wonderful energy, wonderful clarity of stillness. And when that energy gets triggered, when that energy arises, then mindfulness happens, sati happens naturally. And it's mindfulness, it's awareness of knowing what's happening in the present moment and what should be happening. You know different states of the mind arises in your mind. You also know instantly whether it's wholesome or unwholesome. If it's unwholesome, the mind just naturally lets go and steers away towards wholesome states of mind. naturally. Because once you see, obviously, you have clarity, you have mindfulness, you see. Unwholesome state of mind causes suffering. As soon as they arise in the mind, let alone dwelling in it or kind of stewing in it. Irritation arises, you see, you drop it right away. You let go, you move the mind towards this kind of feeling of metta, friendliness, forgiveness, letting go. Feeling of well-wishing to everybody and everything that you can think of, that you come in contact with. So sati, this mindfulness, it's also causally driven. So we're not mindful, check, where's the energy? Am I feeling tired, distracted? When you think a lot, it tires the mind. There'll be not so much mindfulness around what's happening. So this mindfulness, sati, comes from virya. And it's like it's this energy of awareness, of clarity, but deep peace. That you're just knowing, not doing, not reacting, but just knowing. And knowing, but it's also, what is it? It's also coupled with, it's just not knowing, it's knowing, but it's also coupled with like care and compassion. That whatever you're aware of, it has kind of gentle, warm light of accepting, embracing. You see people's, defilements or whatever, but you can see it from a sense of an angle of, perspective of compassion. Yes, this is what happened when you have these things in your mind. You act like this. There's no negativity, it's just acceptance of the way things are. Good, bad, or ugly. This kind of boundless, limitless attitude of just being with things, whatever they may be. Things are just good enough. Things are the way they are because of causes and conditions. So that's this awareness starts to arise. It becomes very clear. And with sati, with mindfulness, then samadhi, stillness, happens naturally. So one relies on each other. So when you don't have stillness, and check your mindfulness level. How are we mindful? Not just when we're sitting and watching our breath, but in our everyday and actions. How do we carry ourselves? Remember what's happening, the present moment. And that, that's kind of, that mindfulness, is something that we can't practice all throughout the day. When you're washing dishes, just know that you're washing dishes, not thinking, not talking, doing one thing at a time, and focus, aware, and present. It's something we practice. And once you carry that mindfulness all the day, then when you sit down, samadhi is easy. Because you've been aware, you've been awake, and you've been practicing letting go of everything else, sustained in the present moment. It's a huge act of letting go of staying in the present moment. Because you're not falling for the ideas and the thinking mind that usually generates the usual kind of broken record of commentaries in the mind. Blah, 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 this happened, that happened, and this person is nice, and that person is not so nice, and today's a good day, yesterday's a bad day. It's a constant commentary that goes through the mind. If I stay in the present moment, we're letting go of all of that. We're just here. So that's why, people say meditation is an act of letting go. It is. By staying in the present moment, we're letting go of everything else, before and after. And when we practice staying in the present moment all throughout the day, we find that meditation becomes very, very easy. We sit and we watch our breath. It stays. It doesn't move around. Because we've established the causal condition for samadhi. It's sati, it's mindfulness. It's awareness. But like I said, this mindfulness, clarity of stillness. And that's the factor of stillness. And once you have stillness, Then the last of the spiritual qualities, spiritual power, is wisdom, panya. And it's not the wisdom that comes from books, or the wisdom that comes from reading or listening to other people. It's the deep wisdom that comes with a clear mind. And it's the wisdom that liberates, frees us from our delusions, frees us from our attachment. So we're thinking that we have a still mind, have good samadhi, and yet this wisdom doesn't liberate. There's not true wisdom. And it's wisdom into usually the three things, three characteristics of life. Wisdom is deep penetration. It's not the surface knowledge that you get when you read. Reading helps, but it's not strong enough to cut off our attachments to things. It's not strong enough to cut off our cravings or our delusions about what life is about. And the wisdom is into, you know, the uncertainty of things. We all can say, you know, it's the Nietzsche, that things change, and each of the weather changes. It's in each other that, you know, things, people come and go. But once, you know, you have deep stillness, you see that, you know, that things don't also come and go. They can disappear and remain empty for a long, long time. We have stillness and we see that the body can disappear for a long, long time and not come back. And then you see what it's like to be liberated from the body, temporarily. You also see anicca into non-self. Do you really see, you know, there is nothing in here. If there's nothing in here, there's nothing out there either. And once you clearly see that, then it's hard to get mad or to get too overly excited about what other people do or say. Because they're all acting out of conditioning. There's not someone there that makes you happy, and there's not someone there to annoy you either. It's all non-self. And we're all acting from past conditioning comes up. So it's impossible to, when we truly see non-self, then compassion arises naturally. We know that there's nobody there, out there, to annoy us, to hurt us. And it's easy to accept and to let go, to embrace and to forgive. This is natural because we recognize deeply there is nothing to get irritated over, and there's nothing to get overly excited about, to get overly attached to. Conditions come and go. So that's also non-self. And that, you know, everything has a certain amount of stress involved. And the deeper our stillness, the still mind, deeper samadhi, then the deeper the wisdom that liberates the mind. So those are the five spiritual qualities that we can count on to empower our practice, that we can reflect on from time to time. What is it that is, you know, lacking in my practice? And how can I... establish the conditions for the rising of these different spiritual qualities? Like I said, you know, to reflect on the practice is not something that is your personal failing if nothing is happening or things aren't going well. To, you know, always step back, reflect, what is it that is missing? And also, but also to accept from time to time that the practice will be, there'll be rough patches. The minds will go, you know, there's days that, you know, you feel, wow, I'm so happy and this is kind of a heavenly place, so peaceful, quiet. And the days are like, you know, I really can't stand this place. I got to get out of here. And that's the next car coming now. I've got to go. And you know, so that's what happens when we're in a practice situation, when there is a contained boundaries that we have to submit to. In terms of, you know, the daily schedule, or in terms of a physical location, that you can't go out when you feel like it. Just to watch the energy, that's, you know, that, whatever that thing inside us, that I want to do this, I want to get out, I want to get my own way, I want to do this. Just watch the energy come and go from time to time. Really understand the restlessness and this sense of self that comes up from time to time. That causes suffering for ourselves, really. Yeah, like I said, in terms of the practice for the next few months, to allow things to happen. Like I was reading earlier in the week of letting the tree grow. We try to do our duties of caring for the tree, keeping the bugs away, watering it, fertilizing it. And then we stop. We don't worry about whether the tree will grow, whether it's going to be a pretty tree or ugly tree, or it's going to be a tall tree or short tree. That's the tree's business. We sit and we watch and we wait. It's the same with our practice. We come to the morning sitting, we sit, and then we wait. In clarity and peace and stillness. Let's see what happens in the mind. We don't sit there and we try to push the mind to more stillness. We try to get irritated of ourselves and the mind wanders away. Just know this is what happens. Part of the practice, and a large part of it, of sitting meditation, is not about, you know, focusing on the breath and staying with it. You know, practice of samadhi is about sitting, watching, and learning about ourselves. If you have a restless mind, just say, this is what restlessness feels like. That's what happens when mind is restless. If you have a sleepy mind, just like, oh, this is what happens when I have a sleepy mind. It feels like this. So it's not get to get carried away with peaceful state, and not to get depressed over distracted states. Knee aches. Yes, that's what happens when you have an achy knee. Just investigate, you know, where is the pain? Investigate, you know, how bored can you get? And that's the thing I was going to talk about. Yes, as the Panza, you know, marches on, there'll be lots of time. And it's one of the things we have to deal with. It's boredom. Really, really bored out of school. Nothing to do. I was looking for what book should I read? Who should I go and talk to? Maybe another cup of tea. Maybe another piece of cheese. Take long walks. But you know, and that will work for a few minutes. That will work for a few days. But eventually you're going to have to sit and face your boredom. Eventually you're going to have to sit and say, okay, yeah, this is what happens when you're in a monastery. You're bored out of your skull. Don't know any monk who hasn't been bored out of their skull many, many times, many, many days. But actually, once you get your mind around the boredom, that's peace. That's peace. It's like when nothing's happening. If you don't like peace, you're not used to peace, then we start to have a negativity towards, you know, nothing's happening. Because we're looking for these great blissful states that we're supposed to be getting into. But I think those blissful states starts with making peace. But nothing's happening. Nothing to do, nothing to look forward to. Nothing to give us that buzz, that hit. And once we start to make peace with boredom, once we want to make peace when nothing's happening, then things start to brighten up. And boredom is great. Boredom is just not boring, but it's wonderful. It's actually deep peace, deep, you know, kind of powerful. And it's very enlivening. We understand that, you know, peace is the highest happiness. And that's why, you know, and that's why people, once you understand that, then yeah, there'll be less kind of impulses to try to get a sense pleasure from doing things, or from having things, or chasing after things. We become more still naturally. Because we know, okay, yeah, this is what happened. We want to have a peaceful mind, still mind. We have to stay still and just allow things to happen. And one of the, boredom is one of the things we have to kind of deal with in a skillful way. And one of the things that we do have to, it's like one of the doors. There are many tests, many doors we have to go through, many trap doors and many maze and byways towards our path to liberation. And boredom is one of the doors that we have to pass through. There's no way around it. Running away from boredom by distracting yourself with projects and books, friends and things, only going to delay your journey. But until then, yeah, it's not the end of the world to have an extra cup of coffee, not the end of the world to read another book. So it's based on our past accumulated merits that we progress towards this path. So those are the few reflections I'd like to offer you for this evening on the spiritual path of the five spiritual powers. Faith or confidence, energy, mindfulness, stillness, and wisdom. Please reflect on it, please make much of it, and may your path to ultimate peace and liberation be quick, short, and full of happiness.
Thank you.